Now, let's get into your guest today.
Great, great. So I've brought Kelly, invited Kelly Thompson. Welcome, Kelly. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you're an extraordinary illustrator, accomplished public speaker and owner of Makers Management, something new we have to talk about, where you help brands, agencies and individuals connect with consumers to solve marketing problems with the help of stunning visuals. I just want to say welcome again to Broad Designs. This is my little segment. Now, Kelly, I've always known you as an amazing illustrator, but I read online that you started out as a photographer. How did that kind of evolution occur?
Well, my inspired 17-year-old self, when I was in high school, I was actually really, really bad at photography, and for some reason, I can't really understand the logic as an adult, but at that time, I decided that if I was bad at it, then I could go to university and become good at it.
Learn how to do it.
I went off and did a Bachelor of Design majoring in photography purely because I was bad at photography and I wanted to learn the tricks to become good at it. So that's how I kind of got into photography. And then I always used to draw a little bit just for fun as well. And so it was actually the drawing that came after I graduated a little bit later on.
And we can sort of hear that Kiwi accent. Was this all happening in New Zealand?
Yes. So that all happened in New Zealand. So I actually graduated and started working as a photographer. I decided that I wanted to get into it straight away. Didn't do an OE or anything like that. So I just really wanted to work for fashion magazines and beauty brands and, you know, mainly fashion-related clients. So I just went as hard as I could, basically, when I first started out with the photography. And the illustration actually came later on because at the start, I was working a bit of retail and working a bit of photography, like building up to photography becoming full-time. And then when I finally got to the point that I had enough photography work, I quit my retail job. But then just because you quit your job doesn't mean that you're suddenly really busy. So I was actually really, really poor. So I've told this story a few times, but my friends would go out and party because they had regular salaries because they were accountants and, you know, normal jobs. And I was just really poor and couldn't go out. So that's when I started to draw.
Yep. Yeah. And were you drawing on your photographs to start with? Is that?
A few times I did draw on my photographs. I actually printed them out and drew by hand on the photos. And that actually led to a little bit of editorial work like that. But then I actually started drawing the models that I photographed. So usually when you photograph a model, they walk in and they're really like pouty and posy and they're just working the camera so hard because they've just seen this all on TV or magazines or whatever. Yep. And then after they talk to you and you relax and half an hour's gone by, then they kind of get to know you a lot better. And then that's kind of when you see them as a person come through in the photos. So that was the moment that started to really inspire me as an illustrator. So that's what I started to draw.
So, yes, we're on the radio and people can't quite see unless they're madly Googling your style.
Google.
Can you explain your style? Because it is really intricate and beautiful and it's kind of hard for me to do justice to it. How would you explain it?
Well, I do all of my work. I start off drawing by hand with pencil, so it's very delicate. And then I colour in digitally. I'm using Photoshop. So I would describe my work in general is very feminine and very delicate, but there's also a confidence to it as well. Mm. So all of the females that I draw in particular, they look at the viewer and they're very present. So although it's very fine line work and very soft, I think there's still a bit of strength to it as well.
Yeah, I agree. And your illustrations have been commissioned and inspired for brands like Dior, Stella McCartney, Karen Walker, CoverGirl. You know, you knew what you wanted to do from the beginning and you've made it happen. Which of these jobs has really stayed with you long after it was done?
I think I did a job for Escada. So I worked on their, it was a new season fragrance launch for summer in, when was it? It was a few years ago now. And so I had to do the perfume packaging and I had to do like point of sale displays that went in airports and like department stores, for example, not Maya, but big shops like that. And that was a huge project for me because I had to pitch against, I think there were 7 other artists internationally. Wow. And it was seriously like, it was like being on Big Brother or something. Big Brother or something like that, because they would, or Survivor, probably Survivor more likely. You had to pitch a round and then someone would get eliminated and then you'd pitch another round and someone else would get eliminated. And the pitching process alone went on for, I think it was about 3 months. It was huge. But I won the pitch in the end. And for me, that was a real kind of turning point in my confidence as well as an artist, and also a little bit in my career as far as being recognized internationally. But I just always remember the feeling when I won that and kind of feeling like, yes, everything that I'd done had finally paid off. And, you know, people do think my work is good enough to be used by a brand like this. So,
and so that was a global kind of job.
Yeah, that was a global campaign. So I actually travelled. I went to London and on the way I stopped in Dubai and I saw it in the Dubai airport and I saw it in the London airport and I was such a nerd. I was... like in the airport beside all of this
gramming it all
and getting all these photos taken and all these people were just looking at me funny like we're in the duty free and this girl's getting taken her photo taken with perfume, you know, first time out kind of thing.
I'm interested in that pitching process though. Were they paying?
Yeah, they did pay, but now that they got a sweet deal because I never realized the magnitude of this pitching process. You know, like it went from October all through Christmas time. I went to Byron Bay and all my friends were, I didn't expect to have a project to do while I was on holiday and all my friends were, you know, swimming and having a great time and they'd be in bed at night and I'd be at my computer at 3 o'clock in the morning like crying because I was like, I just want to have a holiday but I really want to win this. I hate my job. I love my job, you know?
Yeah, that is brutal.
Yeah, it was really brutal.
Very brutal.
I learned a few lessons about learning the scope of a pitch before taking on a pitch, that's for sure.
Yeah, and even the licensing, you know, involved with how far it's going to go.
Yeah, well, it was basically the full... The pitch was basically the full project. Mm. And that's also kind of annoying because had I realised that the work I was doing in the pitch was going to be the final work, then I would have approached it in a completely different way as well.
Yeah,
you know, you live and learn, I guess.
Yes, I'm surprised that that's kind of happening that way still.
Yeah.
I'd feel like agencies like maybe Jackie Winter and stuff sort of are kind of putting a stop to that. But
yeah, Jackie Winter is doing amazing work and that's what I'm doing at Makers Management as well, you know, just educating the clients about how the process needs to work because a lot of the time it's not that they're trying to take advantage, it's just that they don't realise the amount of time and the amount of work that goes into a project. So our job is to really... you know, educate the client and make sure that the process goes a lot more smoothly for both the artist and the client.
Mm. And you often make yourself the focus of your work and your social media posts. You have nearly 23,000 followers. That was a couple of days ago. Might have ticked up.
probably gone down.
That's incredible. How do you feel having such high visibility in the design industry? Like, you really do put your life on Instagram.
It's a bit of a love-hate relationship, to be honest. Like, when I first started putting myself into my social media, it was really uncomfortable for me because I kind of just started to do it because it seemed like what people were doing and a lot of my clients were becoming interested in not only my artwork but me as a person. So I kind of figured that if I put myself out as a person more, then I probably get more work in that kind of vein. So at first I felt like a dick and I would like I'd post something, I'd look at it, I'd take it down, I'd change my mind, you know. And now it's just something that I kind of post like a bit of art, a bit of me, a bit of my lifestyle or whatever. But I feel like it's also quite good because I'm not just tools. You know, yes. I am a person and being a person also adds to the work as well. And it also, you know, like these days a client not only wants you to illustrate something, but they also want you to roll it out on your social media and their social media and maybe they can get you to speak about the project in person and it just adds to the package more than anything.
And it adds to you as a brand as well, really, as an artist. You've got an identifiable style, but it's, the maker behind it.
Yeah.
Becomes part of the job.
Although sometimes I'm just like, why do I bother? Extra work.
It's engaging. It's engaging. It draws me back in.
Oh, that's good. Nice to have you.
Like I was scrolling through the other day and I saw a post I hadn't seen anywhere, which it quite surprised me that there's a certain photography company launching a new camera this year. I'm not saying their name because I'll probably get in trouble. Promoting a campaign where they had 32 men and no women test the product. I mean, did you relate to that? Like, are there instances?
I was just like, where is your head? How did you not even realise that your whole panel of creators is just like after all of the press that all these other companies are getting, you know, like politics is getting, everyone is getting about having no females represented by their brand and then they just had men. It was just get your head out of your butt, you know, like seriously.
It was so unself-aware.
Yeah, it was just it was embarrassing. It made, like, I don't use that brand anyway, but if I was to buy a camera as a female, I would have I would have gone with the other brand, yes, purely because of that.
Because of that. David, did you have a question you wanted to chat to Kelly about?
I did, Kelly. I'm always fascinated, and especially within the realm that you work in, which is a lot of fashion, is that so many people end up in Sydney, don't they?
Yeah.
How did you end up in Melbourne and why?
Well, in 2009, I actually came over to Melbourne, which was my first time visiting here, and I had an exhibition. There was a gallery called Gawker Gallery, which used to be in Collingwood, unfortunately not around anymore because it was a great gallery. But I had a solo show here at Gawker, and I came over and I was here for a week, and the creative community was so positive and just totally embraced me, and I just really felt like I was supported here. So, you know, like strangers would be like, we love what you're doing, we should collaborate sometime, here's my number, I want to go for a beer. Like, everyone was just like on and just so friendly. So when leaving Wellington, my husband and I actually travelled for 3 months, and we decided, he'd lived here before, we decided that if we didn't find anywhere else that we wanted to stop at on the way, then we'd come back to Melbourne, just because overall the creative community is just really amazing here.
And yeah, like, because we hear that all the time in so many forms of the arts, that it's always lovely to hear it when it's an outsider that comes here.
Yeah, it was nice to feel it.
tells us that.
It's, you know, like, nice to hear we're better than Sydney. Yeah,
well,
constantly.
No, I don't look at it
it's
that way.
It's just different, you know?
It's just very different and so creative, and that it is such a hub here, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think there's a really nice support network here, you know, like creatives in New Zealand. You're very much an individual and you don't necessarily have people trying to support you and build you up. But here in Melbourne, I feel still, and I felt at the time, that people actually did want to help, you know. People wanted to connect you to other people, and instead of people just promoting themselves all the time, they also would drop names of other people that they thought I would like, or yeah, people who thought
and
they would
like
me.
You know, like, instead of, oh, I'm not going to give those contacts because, yeah, you know, like, we're Melbourne people, openly give it to you.
Yeah. It's more like, here, yeah, if we all share it, everyone's going to be better, and overall we're going to help each other out a lot more, and I really, really like that community feeling.
Yeah, brilliant.
Great. But it's still a tough gig being an illustrator, yeah? In the age of stock photography and things like that. And I know it's kind of given you some health issues, and you've had to diversify. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I guess you never really think that you would have health problems from, you know, illustrating and drawing and having your dreamy creative life. But the reality is that you're often sitting at a desk like all the time. Your posture is terrible because you're hunched over a page, or you're at a computer, or you're, you know, bending over and you're all over the place. So at first I started to get a lot of really bad neck and shoulder pain. And I used to get migraines all the time as well, which are apparently due to the tension that was in my shoulders, which was due to me leaning on like one of my arms while I drew all the time. So that kind of started out as a really big problem for me. And that would probably have started about 10 years after I started illustrating. So it was a slow brew. But then when it hit really, really bad. And then this year, not really related to my illustration, but this year I was diagnosed with chronic fatigue, which is totally not really related to illustration at all.
How could you be so fatigued? Choosing the right colour.
Yeah, definitely. The pressure, the stress. But yeah, so that's really made me think a little bit more about how I'm working and how productive I'm being in the time that I'm working, and how I can diversify my work as well, so that everything I'm doing is not purely reliant on me, you know.
So you do public speaking, you've got makers management, and you've put a lot of work into diversifying.
Yeah, so I really started to diversify, particularly a couple of years ago when I started to get sick, and when I also just started to feel like, you know, like I'd built this career and I was doing really well and I was in demand, but because you're in demand, you're really busy, but then you kind of just become a little bit of a cog in the wheel for other people's dreams, you know, like, I became the tools to realize other people's vision, and everything was due in 2 days, and like all of the creative joy just started to be taken out of the work that I was doing. Yep. So that was another reason that I decided to diversify. Yep. You know, like, how can I be creative but in a different way, and how can I do different work that will also kind of support me in the future, and doesn't necessarily involve me just drawing away constantly all day like a machine with a sore shoulder and a migraine.
So what is the secret? So you are looking after other illustrators through makers management. What's the secret to success? Like, you really had a very successful year. Mm-hmm. career from the get-go. What do you sort of share with other illustrators?
Well, you've got to be really motivated. Mm. It doesn't just turn up. Like, everyone's like, you're so lucky. It's like, I am not lucky. I busted my ass for a really long time, you know? As an illustrator, you've got to firstly have a folio that represents a large body of like a certain style or a few styles, because a client wants to look at your work and know what they're going to get when they employ you. You also always have to meet a deadline. You have to be really good with communication as well, because not only do you have to give an idea to a client, but you need to help them understand your idea. So if you can't explain your idea, then you're screwed. Unless it's like the most amazing artwork they've ever seen, but in general. You've also got to be, I always say that, you can be the most amazing talent in the whole world, but if no one ever sees your work, then what's the value of the talent? So you've also got to be able to put yourself out there, which is quite hard because a lot of illustrators are introverted as well, you know, so that's probably where a lot of people kind of fall down. You know, you have to get your work out. People have to see it. You need to promote yourself.
Yeah.
You need to work well. You need to keep making work too, because it's always the artists who are making personal work that get the work.
And is that signature style one of those keys too, that people can say, oh, look, that's a Kelly Thompson?
Yeah, it's definitely helpful because, you know, there are a lot of illustrators out there, and especially with Instagram these days, you can see illustrations everywhere. But it's the artists who have a really obvious style or a full body of work in a certain style that they're the ones who gain the attention. And they also gain the trust, and they really also stand out from the herd, I guess. You know, like you're like, boom, that's amazing. You know, there are a lot of girls drawing girls like I drew girls, but my style, it's been developed. So people recognise my style over a herd of other girl drawings, you know?
It's incredible. It does. It stands right out.
And it just takes time, you know?
And how do you personally define success? Because, I mean, I would look at you as an illustrator and go, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, you've got this recognisable style. You've focused on a particular market segment, fashion, and you get the big clients. Is that what success is to you?
It used to be what success is for me. So I've always been someone who sets a lot of personal goals for myself. So I would always feel successful, and I would feel happy when I ticked off a goal. But now I've changed my thoughts a little bit, and I think having, you know, a bit of life balance is success for me, because I've always just worked, and then it's like, what am I working for? You know, like, am I trying to make money, or am I trying to have a lifestyle? You know, so now success is being able to do something that I love and turn it into a money-making venture, but also having time away from that so I can feel creative again and feel recharged and, I don't know, find a hobby. You know, I've got hobbies this year and they're great.
Oh, nice. Well, Pilates is one of them.
Pilates and bar, I love them.
Yeah.
I'm also doing a fashion design diploma at the moment as well, which I'm trying not to turn into a job. I'm just doing it for fun, just to learn something in my spare time.
It's refreshing to hear, because in the creative industry in Melbourne, you know, it is okay if you're making money doing what you love, you got to do it till it kills you.
Yeah.
That's the attitude.
And people do it till they get killed. You know, I see so many creatives all the time who are just burnt out. They've gone full circle and they now hate what they're doing, and they just don't even want to do it anymore, but then they've been doing it for so long that they don't even know what else they would do. And I totally understand that feeling, but yeah, there are a lot of creatives having a bit of burnout right now.
Yeah, it's nice to hear those just sort of twisting that around and making it a sustainable lifestyle. Lastly, I wanted to ask you about your public speaking. You're an avid presenter who has long-lasting relationship with Curvy. I love Curvy. Tell us about that phenomenon and what it's like working in print and on stage.
I'm actually hosting for Curvy next weekend.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, they're doing a Curvy event in the Gold Coast on Saturday, so I'm hosting two panels, which is going to be really cool.
Great.
So I first learned of Curvy when I was in university, and my boyfriend actually bought me a Curvy book. So for those who don't know Curvy is a book and now a conference, and they do exhibitions as well, that really started off supporting female graphic designers and illustrators. So my boyfriend at the time gave me one of the books, and he wrote a love note in the front that said, to my very own Curvy creator, I can't wait to see you in here in the future. And I actually had my work in there the next year, so that was really cute.
Nice.
And since then I've been like a featured artist quite a few times, and then through speaking at other events, creative events, Rob, who is the founder of Curvy, actually asked me if I wanted to start being involved more in their speaking arrangements. So now I'm kind of on board. I've spoken at a couple of their conferences before. And yeah, it's just really cool because the purpose of Curvy is to, it's broaden now, so it's not just females, but the purpose of Curvy is to kind of inspire young creatives and get them to realize that we're just the same as them. We just have more practice, you know, like we're all just females out there doing our creative work, and they can be just like us too. So it's kind of bridging the gap so that they can see us, meet us, talk to us, and just learn more about our processes, which is really cool.
The whole idea of you got to see it to be it.
Yeah, exactly. But I remember, like, when I was younger, I went to a conference, and I just sat in the audience and just felt such a huge disconnect between me as a student and the people on the stage. And I was like, whoa, everything you're doing is so amazing, and how can I ever be like you?
It almost has the opposite effect, doesn't it?
Yeah, it almost intimidates you instead of inspires you. So I think it's really cool, and that's why I speak at a lot of conferences. I always try and keep my speeches very real and very honest, because I want people to know that there's no difference between me now and like what they're doing or where they could be in the future, you know.
No, I think it's a lovely
message. It's all about encouraging the next generation.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time afternoon, Kelly. I'm always so excited whenever I spot your work out in the real world.
Thank you.
And I'm proud that yet another talented Kiwi has decided to call Melbourne home.
There's so many of us.
Yes. So thank you, David and Neil, for sharing your show with me again this Sunday. I'm Jane Connery, and you're listening to Broad Designs on Sunday Arts Magazine on Joy 94.9.